Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Final hour on this Wednesday. Next man up. 102.5 The Game. Jake Lyman, Corey Curtis from News 2. Parker Kelly broadcasting from the Busy Bee. Plumbing, heating, and air conditioning. Game Nashville Studios. Home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Last segment with Corey here. He's got to get over to the Titans. First practice of game week today, getting ready for the Jets. We'll have an injury report coming up this afternoon. But did want to get into some Vandy before Brian Longwell joins us in just a few minutes. Vandy linebacker joining us after they wrap up practice. It was, again, a win is a win. And it's not like it was a last-second win. It wasn't Michigan, Western Michigan. Vandy took care of business against Austin Peay. Just didn't look quite as dominant as maybe you hoped against an FCS team.
Yeah, they're an FCS team, a good FCS team.
Yep, top 15 FCS team.
But you still need to beat them by more than 19 points. I mean, you just do. When you want to be the team that Vanderbilt wants to be, you need to win by more than 19 points. Now, you can't do anything about it. You got to get better. And when I look at it, you know, you scored 21 points on offense. Scored 7
points. Right, yeah, you had the specialty, the kick, punt return touchdown.
So, and you had one of the most explosive offenses in all of college football last year. You know, I keep talking about like the yards per carry, yards per catch last year. It was huge. And when you look at this game, you know, their longest run of the night is 18 yards. Their longest pass play of the night is 31 yards. That's not enough.
Yep.
Not enough, especially against an FCS team. You know, they averaged 4.9 yards per carry, which against an SEC team is great, but against an FCS team, that's not good enough. And, you know, now Junior Sherrill did average 17.5 yards per catch, and so that's where you want him to be. But they've got to be more explosive on offense. And again, I didn't watch much of this game, I'm going to be honest with you, because I was busy streaming Chad Powers with my daughter. But you need to dominate more up front. And that's what they did last year.
Yeah.
So the offensive line's got to get better, and then they've got to make more plays. I know everybody's going to chant, you know, Curtis, and I don't blame them. It's a great name, and I'm honored that they chant my name at the games now. I never thought that would happen at Vanderbilt, but apparently I've worked here long enough where that's what they're doing.
You're getting the respect you deserve now.
It was interesting when you go back and look at Jared's first completion. Have you seen it?
Yeah, I mean, it's a rope.
Yeah, but what did he do? He left a clean pocket.
Yep.
He scrambled out of a clean pocket. He got impatient and went to the right and left a clean pocket. And that's going to, for true quarterback people, that's going to drive them nuts. 18 years old, 19 years old, that's kind of what happens. And that's the stuff that Clark Lee and his staff see, where they're like, he may not be ready to start yet.
Yeah, and his second pass was tight window completion, but we talked about it with Parker yesterday, like, probably a pick six against an SEC team. I mean, the corner was right there. So Jared Curtis, I think, showed everybody the raw ability that he has, but I think also showed the freshman moments that you're going to have to deal with. Clark Lee did say yesterday both quarterbacks are going to play again this week.
They need to.
And I
mean, look, Blaise Berlowitz did not throw a touchdown against Austin Peay.
No. I mean, and I don't think Blaise was bad, but there was just nothing special about what he did.
QBR of 37.
Right.
Against an FCS team. It's not good enough.
There was no explosive plays. They had the one play to Sherrill, the 31-yard gain, but that was he caught a 10-yard pass and bounced off a tackle and ran for 20 more.
And I'm not trying to bang on Blaze here, because it goes for the whole team. But, you know, you're the quarterback. You need to push this team forward. You need to get more out of what you've got there. And – you know, if they don't do better than this against Delaware, there's going to be some concerns going into the SEC campaign.
Yeah, you look back at it was 2023, the year they went 2-10, and again, not by any means saying I think this is a 2-win team.
Didn't they lose to East Tennessee State that year?
No, this was the year they beat Hawaii, and it might have been Alcorn State. It was Hawaii and then an FCS opponent. And it just didn't look inspiring. They won, but it was just
the Hawaii game was a shootout.
Yes. Yeah. It was just one of those games where it's like, okay, you won. Great. But man, shouldn't it look better against that team? Mm-hmm. And then they didn't win a game in the SEC. So, again, not saying that's what's going to happen, but I think Delaware is an important opportunity to just, like, calm people down.
Yeah, we're just talking about the offense.
Right, the defense.
The defense was very good.
Defense
less than
good.
200 yards.
They gave up a touchdown on the first drive, and then really Austin Peay didn't do much the rest of the day.
I think they had 116 through the air and like 50 or 60 on the ground. So they had like 170 yards for the day.
They averaged 2.5 yards a carry, 5.5 yards per pass.
I wonder what all those numbers were after the first drive, too. I mean, I'll bet they were, you know, obviously even lower.
Yeah,
and
let's
so,
see.
So, you know, they got their stuff together after the opening. So I think if you want to hang your hat on something, it's, hey, defensively, I think they're going to be okay. But offensively, they got to do more.
Yeah, they had after the first drive, Austin Peay had 103 total yards the rest of the game. So it was a good performance by the defense. It was what you expected from the defense. The offense needs to be more explosive. I totally get playing both quarterbacks again this week.
Yes.
I would like to see Jared Curtis get more of an opportunity to settle in, get into a rhythm. Because his first opportunity is a two-minute drill, which
is a little weird.
It was a little bit strange to put him in there. And then he came back in garbage time when the game was decided. I'd like to see him, in the normal flow of the game, maybe get some opportunities this week.
Well, I think, I think they would like it if they could get up like 14-0 in the first half and then put him in there. But you're going to need Blaze to do more.
Right. And, I mean, again, it's not like Blaze Berlewitz was bad. He didn't have any turnovers. He averaged, 9 yards an attempt? So it was like...
Yeah, but safe isn't winning.
Right.
It's not losing.
It looked more like the 2024 Vandy offense that was still successful, but it was ball control, right? It was, we're going to run the ball, we're going to bring the play clock down to 5 seconds every single time, and we're going to win this game because you're not going to possess the ball enough to score more than we did. And that worked against – that is how they beat Alabama 2 years ago. Should you have to do that against Austin Peay is the question.
No, I mean, that's my thing. It's like you need – I don't care how good – this team is as a 1AA team, you should mop the floor with them.
Right.
You should. I mean, look at what Tennessee did to Furman.
I will say a lot of Vandy fans have pointed to this. Was it last year Georgia and Austin Peay played, and Georgia won that game 28-6?
You know,
so it was very close.
You're not wrong. Austin Peay did play them close, and you look at what Georgia just did to Tennessee State.
Yes.
I think, you know what, if I'm a Vandy fan, I think that is a fair argument. Because Austin Peay went between the hedges, and that one was a lot closer than people thought it was going to be.
Right. So with
but Georgia also has a history of not – like that cover for them, for Georgia against TSU, was a very rare cover when they're favored by more than 40.
Yeah.
They usually don't.
They scored touchdowns on, their first 5 drives to start the game?
I'm not trying to be mean here. I think Tennessee State is going to have a very, very long year.
Yep. Yep. I would agree with that. Delaware coming in this week, their first game was against Merrimack. They won 42-7, so I'm not sure how much you can really take from that.
Is that like a club team?
very well could be. Last year, Delaware went 7-6. So this is a game that Vandy should win.
Did they try to get Joe Flacco a fifth year to come back and play this
maybe
year?
They should. Delaware actually just got a 4-star quarterback recruit to commit to them. He's not there yet, obviously. But
raising his price.
Yeah. So Delaware is a game Vandy, again, should win big. And I think the one thing that you're looking for this week is if both quarterbacks are playing, whoever it is, be more explosive offensively.
Yeah.
Find a way to get chunk plays against a team that is not supposed to be in your – they're not in your league. They're not playing at the same level.
Don't grind it out against Delaware.
Yes.
Make plays. Because, again, and look, we haven't been used to this for a long time. I mean, we watched a Vanderbilt team last year that made plays.
Yeah.
You had NFL players.
Well, watching Louisville Ole Miss, you see Trey Richardson. It's like, man, Vandy could really use a guy like that right now to stretch the field.
I wonder how much Louisville spent to go get him.
Yeah, they clearly value him because they were getting him the ball every way they could, whether it was vertically, whether it was the screen game, whether it was jet sweeps. Like, they wanted to get Trey Richardson the ball. So that is one of those that I think you noticed on Saturday night was they did not have the field stretcher who could get you big gains vertically in the passing game.
Look, I think Junior Sherrill can.
He can. He doesn't have the track speed Trey Richardson does.
No, but he can definitely make the big plays. He's made the big plays down the field for Vanderbilt, so I think he can. He's look, quarterbacks got to be able to give him the football.
Yeah.
And, you know, Pavia, say whatever you want about him, he could throw the ball down the field. I mean,
he became a like tenfold more accurate downfield passer from 2024 to 2025. Yeah. Yeah. And that was a huge reason why Vandy was so much more dangerous offensively last year. So this is going to be an important game for Vandy, narrative-wise, this weekend, with NC State coming to town next week, your first real true test of the year. Corey, it's been a blast having you in.
Yeah, I'm sorry I got to go.
It's all good.
But it's Tootie
calls.
Yep.
We will talk to you next week and have real Titans football to discuss.
Yeah, we'll have a win or a loss, and we'll
– yeah.
You know, just before I go, everybody, win or lose, keep it together.
The sun's going to come up on Monday morning.
And I didn't tell my Elik Iomanner story.
Oh, yeah. Do you want to do it quickly?
Yeah, I'll just try to do it real quick.
Okay.
So I asked him in the locker Monday about – you know, I said, you were in more fights than anybody in training camp. I said, you were in like 700 fights. And he goes, well, that might be hyperbole, 700. I'm like, well, yeah, it is. But you were still in more fights than anybody. I said, what goes on? And he was like, I would expect anybody on this team to bring their best every day. And basically, he said in not so friendly terms, he had to find a way to get himself to practice like every day was the effing game.
Yeah.
That's kind of what he said.
I love it.
And so when you hear that and you hear JC, that's a different tone from this football team. And I'm like, okay. And I want to see Elik on the field.
Yeah.
I do. I want to see Elik on the field.
Me too. I think that he has earned himself some opportunities with what he did in camp. So
Well, he's part of the future of this team.
Right.
And so he needs to play.
Exactly. Exactly. Corey, right, great having you in. We will talk to you next week.
All right, later.
615-737-1025. Coming up next, we will be joined by Junior Sherrill, Vanderbilt linebacker. Junior Sherrill was last week. Brian Longwell, Vanderbilt linebacker, and continue to talk about the Doors. Jake Lyman, Corey Curtis, Parker Kelly, next man up, 1025 The Game. Next man up, 1025 The Game. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly with you. Few more segments left on this Wednesday. Corey Curtis had to run. Titans practice going on later today. Open locker room, and we'll get our first injury report of the season. We will see how healthy the Titans really are heading into week one against the Jets. I think Cedric Gray, after the UTV incident over the weekend, going to be the name everybody's looking for. So keep it tuned right here throughout the day. We'll have updates as the Titans again begin their preparation for the Jets on Sunday. We are going to be joined shortly by Vanderbilt linebacker Brian Longwell. Commodores coming off that big win to open the season. Needed to get a win against Austin Peay on Saturday, 28-9. Again, you would have liked to see them win by more than that against Austin Peay. But Delaware this weekend, Parker, I'm hoping to see Vandy make a little bit of a statement here, because you're starting to see the fans around the country, around the SEC, leak out with the same old Vandy stuff of like, oh, is it heading back to pre-Pavia days? And I can't believe with the talent that's on this roster that this team is going to go back to 2023 or before. So I think that this team is going to look better this weekend. I do wonder how long can Clark Lee go without naming an official starter to play the full game, right? Like Berlewitz and Curtis, you can go back and forth. And I know Blaze played a majority of the game and was the starter. Who knows what this week's going to look like? I just wonder how long this can go on before making a decision one way or another about who's going to lead your team.
Yeah, I'm of the belief that the second Jared Curtis is able to mentally handle everything that happens pre-snap, because, you know, Tim Beck and Jerry Kill, what they like to do on offense, there's a lot of eye candy pre-snap, right? There's a lot of get on the line, off the line, come in motion. There's a lot of that going on, so it's a lot to digest if you're a quarterback, especially, you know, a true freshman 18-year-old. So the second that Jared Curtis is able to get all of that down, all that comes with everything pre-snap, the talent, he's much more talented than Blaze Berlewitz, and I think that's the point in time when Jared Curtis is named QB1.
Yeah, I think it's a matter of time until Jared Curtis is the guy for Vanderbilt, obviously. I mean, when you get a quarterback of that caliber coming out of high school, he is the future. And Vandy, I think, is trying to do everything they can to help him adjust to the college game. Because, yes, I think there is value to throwing him out there and saying, go, kid, figure it out. But also, you worry about killing his confidence. I've brought up A.J. Swan as an example of highly recruited guy who Vandy kind of threw out there and said, go figure it out. And he turned the ball over a lot and lost his confidence, and we really never saw him turn into the player that you expected him to be. So with Jared Curtis, you want to guard against that. But also, I've said it all along, I just do wonder how long until you rip the Band-Aid off. Because if you're not going to play him for an extended period this weekend, if you're not going to give him the full game against NC State, I really doubt that you're going to just throw him in the fire at Auburn or at Georgia. So if you don't give him those extended reps this week and or next week, do you kind of have to wait until the second half of the season when you get into Arkansas, Kentucky, Mississippi State, that stretch to really insert him as the full-time starter? I don't know. So I think this week, next week, Clark Lee is going to have to make a call of whether he's going to go with Curtis for those big road games and the home game against Ole Miss coming up over a three-week stretch, or do you stick with Berluwitz and maybe save Curtis for later on in the year?
The good thing about this is you can't run two quarterbacks out there once you get into the meat of SEC schedule, especially with nine conference games. But with the way that Vanderbilt's schedule is constructed, you're afforded the opportunity to be able to do that right now. With Austin Peay, with Delaware, the way NC State looked against Virginia in week zero, you feel a lot more confident heading into that one. Plus, it's in your building. So I don't know if you have to have the starter officially figured out by NC State. I would like Vanderbilt to have it figured out by then. But you and I both know that there was a different type of energy. There was a spark when Jared Curtis entered the game in that late second quarter for the two-minute drill that you just didn't get with Blaze Berluwitz.
And it is tough for Blaze, right? You feel for him. He's a guy who's paid his dues. He's been the backup for 3 years and been in this system, and he gets an opportunity to compete and wins the job. And I think he has to understand the situation that he's in, where Jared Curtis is viewed as the savior, right? Like, I mean, he is the highest rated recruit in program history. So it's difficult for Blaze Berluwitz, I'm sure, to hear boos and the crowd chanting Curtis, because it's just like, no matter what you do, everybody's going to be looking at Jared. And I don't know how that plays out over the next couple of weeks. Clark Lee should not be listening to the fans when it comes to what decision he's going to make at quarterback. The old saying, you listen to the fans, pretty soon you're going to be sitting with them. So you can't listen to what the fans want and just give fan service and say, all right, fine, we'll put Curtis out there before he's ready. But I also do feel for Blaze. Like, that can't be a fun feeling for him, being the starting quarterback for a team and have your home crowd not happy to see you out there, right?
It's definitely not an enviable position to be in. I understand, you know, I would have went about it a different way. I probably would have started Jared Curtis week one, but it kind of makes sense, because if anything, you know, Blaze Berluwitz has time on task in that system entering year four. He may not have the same talent that Jared Curtis has, or, you know, even Diego Pavia for that matter, but he has the experience, and he serves as that stopgap until Jared Curtis is ready to go. I think deep down inside, if you're Blaze Berluwitz, you know that you're not going to be the guy this season, which I'm sure is a tough pill to swallow, but it's just kind of the reality of the situation, and this is a business ultimately, and you're paid to win games. So when Jared Curtis gets the playbook down, he will be QB1.
Yeah, and I don't think Blaze Berluwitz is a bad quarterback, but
I don't think so either.
I think he executed the offense decently well on Saturday night, but when you're playing in the SEC, at some point you got to do something special to win football games. And I do wonder if Blaze has that in him to do something special and be somebody who you can trust going. Because, like, Auburn, I think Auburn is a good example on the road coming up in 2 or 3 weeks. That's a winnable game. You're on the road. But you need a quarterback who's going to be able to make plays for you to go win that game. And Do I know if Blaze Berlowitz at an SEC level can go win a football game on the road? I don't. Now, I don't know about that, about Jared Curtis, but I do think when you watched Curtis, I do think that you saw some just the spark that he brought. And so we'll see. I think this week is big. Both guys are going to play, and we'll see how that pans out. 615-737-1025. We're going to take a quick break. Brian Longwell, linebacker from Vanderbilt, going to join us when we come back. 615-737-1025. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly, next man up, 1025 The Game. Next man up, 1025 The Game. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly with you. 30 more minutes left on the show. Robert Saleh speaking at the podium right now. We'll keep an eye on that, give you updates if anything notable comes out of it. Robert Saleh did say that Cedric Gray still has a chance to clear concussion protocol for week one. So that is good news on Cedric Gray possibly playing against the Jets on Sunday. Again, Vanderbilt linebacker Brian Longwell going to join us shortly. They're wrapping up practice over there. So excited to speak with Brian, a Nashville native, a senior, part of this Vandy defense that after giving up an opening drive touchdown, held Austin Peay to just 3 points for the final quarter and a half of that game. So a good start for that defensive unit. We'll talk to Brian coming up in just a bit. And Parker, with Vanderbilt, something that we talked about when Andrew Allegretta's been on is that Vandy this year, no matter who is playing quarterback, they were going to hang their hat on running the ball and playing defense. And I think you saw that the defense has talent. Now, against Austin Peay, they need to continue to show what they can do as the competition level continues to grow. I am the running game, 4.9 yards per carry is not bad, right? Like, it is a good mark if you're playing more competitive teams, right? Like, playing in the SEC, you average 5 yards a carry, you feel pretty good about that. Cedric Alexander, MK Young, James L. Lasseter, I'd like to see them be able to, you know, bust off a couple of chunk plays this weekend against Delaware. You know, 18 yards was the longest run. That was the touchdown from Cedric Alexander on fourth down in the third quarter. I'd like to see multiple 30-plus yard runs from those guys, because I do think we've seen Alexander, Young, Lasseter especially, pretty much every time he touched the ball last year, it was explosive. You'd like to see those guys really be a weapon for this Vanderbilt offense with two quarterbacks kind of still learning on the job.
The run game is going to be the strength, I think, regardless of who's at quarterback this year, because you have your final years of Cedric Alexander and MK Young, both of which don't get talked about enough in the SEC, let alone nationally, for how good of a job that they actually do. And they're so interchangeable. They can catch out of the backfield. They can block for one another. You can have them out there at the same time. So you would have liked to see more explosive plays on Saturday night versus Austin Peay. I don't think we saw any.
The 31-yard pass to Sherrill was...
Yeah.
But, like, again, that wasn't...
But there was one he dropped, too.
That wasn't a slant. Big throw down the field. Right. He did drop the slant.
That probably would have went for a touchdown if he would have caught it.
Right. So, I think being more explosive is a big thing. And I do wonder, the offensive line, we noted a couple of times, we saw them mixing guys in and out, right? So, I do wonder if maybe they were experimenting on who should play at their, McConnell's going to be your strong guard. I think I'm blanking on the Pitt transfer is going to be your center.
Lyndon Cooper.
Lyndon Cooper is going to be your center. But I think they were kind of rotating guys in and out, seeing what they had. The offensive line needs to be better. Right? The one play that I think worried me the most from Saturday's game was when you had fourth and one, and you couldn't push the pile to get 1 yard and move the chains. That was late when Jared Curtis was in the game. Like that, it's Austin Peay. You should be able to win that battle up front and go get a yard, and you didn't. So I think the offensive line having a better game on Saturday against Delaware is going to be important too.
Well, there were also two penalties on Cade McConnell that were very
that
uncharacteristic.
Is true, yeah.
There were some penalties in general, and for a group that is having to replace four of their starters from last year, I still feel confident enough in that group that they can, you know, be a force to be reckoned with. There were some times that they weren't getting any push on Austin Peay's defensive line, which, again, it's week one. I don't know how much, you know, because everything's so vanilla. But still, you should be able to get more push on a Austin Peay defensive line.
Yeah, and I do think part of the Vandy offense being vanilla, like you said, is Tim Beck probably didn't want to put too much on tape, right? Like, that's a game that you can win with your vanilla game plan. Now, you would have liked to win bigger and have more of those explosive plays, but you don't have to, you know, throw everything but the kitchen sink at Austin Peay to try and win that football game. We'll see if maybe they diversify it a little bit more. Like, Parker, there was a stretch I remember in that game where they just ran, it looked like the exact same play to Cedric Alexander three straight times.
Yeah,
just run
yeah.
left, run left, run left. It's like,
and then throw a jet sweep in there.
Right. It was a very vanilla game plan, as to be expected. And I think as you get closer to the SEC schedule, I think you're going to see them work more things in there, but also be wary of putting too much on tape that's going to give those SEC opponents an advantage. So it is going to be an interesting game on Saturday against Delaware. Again, not a game that I'm worried about Vanderbilt losing, but a game that you'd like to see them instill a little bit more confidence in what this offense can do this year.
You're right. I mean, everything was so vanilla on Saturday night, and maybe, you know, you would have liked to see more explosive, yes. You would have liked to see Vanderbilt beat Austin Peay by more than 19 points, yes. They should have done that. I also think there's a little bit of strategy involved, because you can probably get by your first three games without exposing your entire playbook. But then once you get on the road at Auburn in week four, then you got to start to turn things up a notch, because you're calloused a little bit, to use a Salahism right there. Three weeks into the season. But also, too, you know, I'm just looking at the box score. Between Cedric Alexander and MK Young, they had a combined 84 rush yards.
Yeah, right. I mean, the run game, it wasn't bad, right? Like, I don't think you can look at the run game and say that they were stuffed. Like, they
186
ran,
as a team.
They ran the ball effectively, but maybe not as effectively as you would have hoped heading into that game. Again, I think expectations makes that result look worse, because you see Austin Peay on the schedule and you expect them to blow them out. And I understand why Vandy fans are disappointed with the results they saw on Saturday night. But it also is just game one, and you're seeing a quarterback, whether it's whether it was Berlowitz, whether it was Curtis, getting their first real opportunities in a game. So excited to see what Saturday night looks like, or Saturday afternoon, I should say, looks like against Delaware. It'll be a 3:15 kick, 1:45 pregame show on Saturday right here on 102.5 The Game. And we are now thrilled to be joined on our phone lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, by Vanderbilt linebacker Brian Longwell. Brian, thanks so much for taking some time. How's it going this morning?
It's going good. Thank you for having me.
Well, we're glad to have you on. A win on Saturday. Congratulations, 28-9 over Austin Peay to start the season. After you guys gave up an early touchdown in that game, the defense really locked down, only gave up 3 points the rest of the way. How did you feel you guys settled in after giving up the early 6 points there?
Well, I think it's really comes down to our mindset. You know, like that whole head body mindset. Next snap doesn't matter. Only matters is the next snap. I think we embodied it, you know, right after that, the PAT blocked, returned it back for 2 points. And then that kind of solidified that play was gone and that it doesn't matter. Now we're just on to the next one.
Your linebacking group, so much experience there with Nick and Bryce and yourself. How do you think that helps you guys in that room, just having played so much football and played so much football together as a unit?
Yeah, I mean, it helps a ton. I mean, I think the IQ in that room is so high now. I mean, and the chemistry is just a bond that we have. I mean, no matter who's out there, who's playing with each other, I mean, it all feels the same. And, you know, like, that's kind of the ideal that you want with linebackers, that you can have a good three-man rotation that the standard never drops between everybody.
Talking to Brian Longwell, Vanderbilt linebacker. Brian, we've been talking a lot about the secondary kind of coming into the season, how, you know, you added Ricardo Jones, transfer from Clemson, and the experience overall that you guys have. But what about that front seven? What should we expect from Vanderbilt's front seven this season?
I mean, it's like a ton. I mean, I can't tell you how happy I am that East is back, man. I mean, I'm excited to play with him and see what a full season of a mature, you know, him growing into his body, you know, how gifted that is, him being able to use that to the maximum. The new guy, B.A., Edwin, I think they've really come along, and just their pass rush prowess and the experience that they bring at edge. And Glenn just being a big run stopper, you know. Like, I think all of them are really coming to their own, and I mean, you expect big things from them.
The thing that I love most about what Clark Lea has kind of established on West End is, you know, you're coming off of a 10-win season last year in the regular season, best season in Vanderbilt football history, but yet you walk around that building and you can kind of sense that you guys aren't satisfied with that and just winning 10 games in the regular season. How have you seen Clark Lea kind of establish a different culture just in your tenure alone at Vanderbilt?
I mean, I think from the time – you know, the new staff got here and everything like that. Like, he was like, you know, we're going for national championship. Like, there's nothing less, you know, like, cool, 10 wins is great, but that doesn't get you a national championship trophy, you know? And that kind of thought process of all that matters is that. And anything less is honestly a disappointment. So never be satisfied with anything less than that.
We're talking with Vanderbilt linebacker Brian Longwell. Brian, I know it's a long offseason to get ready for that first game. Now that you have one under your belt, what's kind of been the process this week of learning from some of the mistakes from Austin Peay but trying to turn the page to Delaware?
Yeah, you know, I mean, every year the first game is always kind of the worst performance. I mean, you're knocking off the rust. There's always some operation things that need to be worked out. I think we've kind of got our feet up under us now and are going to be a lot cleaner going into this game. I think there's too many penalties this week, this past week. I think we've cleaned up a lot of that this week.
As someone who is a Nashville local, and I know there are a lot of you who are local to this area playing for Vanderbilt, how much has it meant to you to be a part of the growth of this program from your freshman year, where you guys only won two games, to see the growth year over year that this program has made?
Yeah, I mean, it means a ton to me. I mean, this is my brother's favorite school coming growing up. And being able to, you know, make his favorite school a powerhouse and be a part of the change there has been like a lot to me. And, you know, just being able to be near my family all the time. I mean, my parents bought like 20 tickets for people to come to that game, you know, just that sense of like hometown pride that I have, being able to just like, I don't know, it's an indescribable feeling, man. I'm so grateful for it.
Last one for you, Brian. How have you guys been feeling, you know, on the defensive side of the ball as far as stunts and blitzes? Could you expect to see a lot of that versus Delaware? Or do you expect that might be something that you kind of ramp up like once you get to NC State? And I know you're not looking at that, but it didn't seem like there were a whole lot of stunts and blitzes on Saturday night versus Austin Peay.
Yeah, you know, that's kind of a game plan thing. You know, we knew he was dangerous on the run, and he liked to get out of the pocket, so we were just really focused on keeping him in there and making sure that we funneled him into the rush. But, I mean, I think the pass rush plan is a pass rush plan. He gets it out quick. He's really fast with it, so all the stunts and stuff might hit, but we do have some stuff keyed up for them, you know. And we have a nice plan coming into this game for him and to ready to get him on the ground.
Brian, thanks so much for taking the time. Wishing you the best luck this weekend against Delaware and the rest of the season. We hope to talk again soon.
All right, sounds good. Thank you.
Brian Longwell, Vanderbilt linebacker, joining us after practice. Commodores getting ready for Delaware on Saturday. We will react to what Brian had to say. Wrap up the show after this. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game. Next man up, 102.5 The Game. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly, wrapping up the show on this Wednesday. Big thanks to Corey Curtis with us for most of the show today. And a big thanks to Brian Longwell, Vanderbilt linebacker, joining us in the last segment as the Commodores prepare for Delaware on Saturday. But the big story today, of course, is that football is back. We have real-life NFL football on our televisions coming up in, if I can do the math in my head again, a little under 8 hours. We are a little under 8 hours from getting back to real NFL football. It'll be the same game that ended the 2025 season in the Super Bowl, Patriots-Seahawks tonight. I just can't wait. I love opening night in the NFL. Just there's something different about hearing, I know you played it earlier, the NBC Sunday Night Football theme, and when you hear Mike Tirico coming in, and it's just, there's something special about it, and so I can't wait. I think it's going to be a good game tonight. I really do. I think the Patriots are improved as a team. That doesn't mean they're going to have more wins. Their schedule is going to be tougher. I think the Seahawks are a little worse than last year, but obviously still one of the Super Bowl contenders. I think it's going to be a really phenomenal football game tonight. I can't wait.
I do too. I'm excited to see A.J. Brown's debut for the New England Patriots. I do think from a roster standpoint, the Seahawks are a little bit worse than they were last year. I still think they're going to be really, really good. But getting a Super Bowl rematch in week one, in Seattle too, I mean, that crowd's going to be at full throat. They have one of the best venues in the entire NFL. Really excited for this one.
Yeah, I mean, the 12s are going to be out in full force. It is a little strange that it's a Wednesday. We were talking about that during the break, but I guess the way it worked out, they wanted to make sure that the Rams and Niners didn't have to play on Friday, like we've seen with some of the other international games in week one. It was Packers-Eagles 2 years ago in Brazil, so I get it. I do, and I'm glad that we get two games this week instead of just the one. It is a little strange it's a Wednesday, but I don't think that'll stop that Seattle crowd from being out there. I said it before, I'm going with the Seahawks. I think the Seahawks win by a touchdown, right? Like, I'll go like 30 to 21 or something like that, 30 to 24, somewhere in that range. I think the Patriots are good. I think in that environment, on that night with the banner being raised, I think it's going to be the Seahawks who get it done.
I do too. I don't think that, you know, we're all talking about the Rams as, you know, kind of the Super Bowl or bust team, that there's going to be no one that's going to stand in their way. But yet the Seahawks were able to beat them 2 out of 3 times last year. So I don't think the Seahawks are going to stop the Rams from getting into the Super Bowl this year, but I think that'll be the NFC Championship game. I still believe the Seahawks are still a really good team, even though they lost some pieces on the secondary, lost some pieces on that defense. I still think that defense is going to be one of the best in the NFL.
Yeah, that Seahawks-Rams, the two matchups that we get this season are going to be marquee both times. I would assume both those games are in primetime, right? Like, they kind of have to be.
I don't think they have a choice.
Let me see. Seahawks schedule. I'm sure they have a lot of primetime games. So Seahawks-Rams, they don't play until Christmas. That's the first Seahawks-Rams game, is week 16. So we don't get to see those two teams play until Christmas Day. That is obviously prime time. And then the final game of the year is Seahawks-Rams. So I'm going to guess it gets one of those primetime slots just based on where we expect those teams to be. But yeah, those will be fun games. And the NFL smartly making us wait 3 months before we get either of them. Again, Titans getting ready for the Jets on Sunday, week one. We know it's a big game. If the Titans lose that one, we've seen it on the text line, right? There are people saying that if the Titans lose this game to the Jets, they're just giving up on the season already, which, right, wrong, indifferent, I don't know. But, like, it kind of just shows you the apathy of Titans fans right now. If they don't show you hope and show you a spark quickly, I think you're going to lose a lot of fans this year. Not that it's not already going to be this way, but if you lose, what, your first four games are Jets, Eagles, at the Giants, at the Ravens. If you're 0-4 after that stretch, the farewell tour of Nissan Stadium is going to include a whole lot of other teams' fans, right? Like, fans just aren't going to come out to watch bad football for a third or fourth straight year in a row. So I think Sunday is really important just to give a little bit of hope and a little bit of a spark to this team. It looks like the Titans going to be pretty healthy. Robert Saleh just spoke at the podium. He said, outside of Cedric Gray, it is a clean bill of health, so everybody else should be out on the practice field today. And he did say Cedric Gray has a chance to clear concussion protocol before Sunday's game. So that is good news. Titans going to be healthy. Hopefully we'll have Cedric Gray out there, but obviously that remains to be seen after the UTV incident this weekend.
Yeah, I think I was talking with Connor about this last night. We were 3 games into the season last year, and everybody in that press box knew that the Titans season was over.
Yeah,
three weeks in.
That Colts game, I think, is exactly the moment where everyone knew that you could turn the page to draft season.
So
right?
Uncompetitive, and I just do not want to spend however many months we spent talking about the draft and offseason, OTAs, training camp, just for the Titans to lose in week one, and then we're back to talking about whatever.
Well, right. It just goes into, like, after week three, it was, all right, when's Callahan getting fired? And, you know, where are the Titans going to be picking in the draft? I don't want that again this year. Win two of these first four games. That's asking for a lot, again, for a team that's won six games in 2 years. But win two of these games. Beat the Jets on Sunday and see if you can get one of the next three. Getting the Eagles at home is not – I would not pick the Titans to win that game. But getting them at home in week two, where they're still adjusting to a new offensive system, they're adjusting to not having A.J. Brown, that's more winnable, I think, than if you saw them in December. The Giants is a winnable game even on the road. I don't think you're going to beat the Ravens on the road. But the Ravens are notorious for starting seasons slow over the past few years. So win two games over the first four, and I think that gives the fan base enough hope to keep watching and keep caring about the actual results of these games rather than just checking out like I think we've seen over the past 2 years. But we still got a couple more days before we get to game day. We'll be back tomorrow, 9 a.m., getting ready for Titans and Jets, recapping Patriots and Seahawks, getting ready for another college football weekend, and much more. Excited for that. That does it for us today. Again, thanks to Corey Curtis. Thanks to Brian Longwell for joining us. Chase and Big Joe are coming up next. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to 102.5 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.